Blog Talk Radio.
Well, guys, I don't know what's going on, but it looks like our intro isn't playing. So we are having some definite issues here at Blog Talk Radio on the World of Ink Network. So I'm just going to jump in. This is your host, Virginia Grenier, today. And it is, of course, Tuesday, September 1st. Hard to believe we're already into September. And this is World of Ink Network. We are a featured network here on Blog Talk Radio. I will just quickly go over what our intro is, even though it sounds so much better with our music. So just so anybody who's tuning in for the first time and has never listened to the World of Ink, we are a company that does radio shows. We help authors and publishers with marketing. And we have a website that you can always learn more about us, which is worldofinknetwork.com. And we also have a Facebook, Twitter, and blog site as well. So you can just actually Google World of Ink Network and pretty much everything pops up. My partner is Marcia Casper Cook, and she is here today listening in, but she's not on the show with us today. And quickly, just to go over some of the things that we have coming up, we are going to be scheduling some shows throughout September. They're not up yet, and I have a feeling that has to do with some of the technical issues that we have going on at World of Ink / Blog Talk Radio. But I actually have a lot of authors that come on that start going out to book festivals throughout October. So those will have some shows with them, like with Johnny Worthen, Jonah Pody, Brad Wilcox, Craig Clyde, or just Justin Osman, just to name a few of the authors that will be coming up in September. There is a show that is scheduled for September 9th, and that is going to be about a book that covers pediatric cancer patients who have worked with Jonathan Diaz to take some like fantasy photographs, and then from there the children got to work with best-selling authors such as Shannon Hale, Brandon Mall, Jennifer Nielsen, and others to create basically stories around their fantasy photo shoot to tell some fun stories. So that will be coming up on September 9th. But today we have back on our show Jacqueline Weiss, because she has her series, her My Luck series, and then you just had your novella come out, Just My Luck. So we brought her back on to kind of talk to us about some of the writing you've been doing and to share what you have coming up this fall. So it's great to have you back, Jacqueline.
Oh, it's good to be back.
So I know we had you on last year around this time because you were one of our speakers down in St. George, Utah, at the book festival there. So what have you been up to for this last year?
A lot of writing, and I actually got my rights back for my Luck series, and so I did a lot of rewriting of those, and I put them back out again this year, so that took a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun, and I love the covers and everything else with those. And then, like you said, I put out the Just My Luck book, and that was a lot of fun. I've had some good feedback about that because it's about Megan's brother, and it's just a little short story. And I'm trying my hand at Sweet Romance right now, just clean romance book. I'm about done with that book. And I've done a lot more writing conferences this year. I got to go down to Tucson to a book festival down there, and that was a lot of fun, my first time in Arizona. So I've kept myself busy. And then on top of that, I have my six kids and all of their sports and other activities.
Yeah, so it sounds like you've been very busy. So I'm curious because I've noticed that it's becoming more common now that a lot of authors have either bought their rights back or their rights have reverted back to them on some of their books. So When that happened with your My Lux series, did you go forward and go do it more like in the indie market and re-release it like through Amazon, the Amazon platform, or did you find another publisher that picked it up? How did you handle that? Because that's something that we're starting to see happening a little bit more often than it used to in the industry.
I did it indie. I had so many times when I wanted to fix, you know, mistakes or a little bit better covers or whatever else, and I wasn't getting the help. I'm like, this time I want to try it by myself. And when the rights got back, it was kind of accidental. They had sold part of their company and then forgot to get us a new contract. And so my rights just went back to me accidentally, but I was trying to get them back anyway. But so it was a happy ending for me. I had my own ideas for the books, for the covers and stuff, and my sister helped me out with those, and I thought they turned out fantastic. I've had a lot of really good feedback for it, but that was one that I put so much heart and soul into that series. I wanted to do it by myself and see where it could go from there, and it was a lot of fun. And I have one more book in that series that I need to write. And in fact, this last one that I put out in June and then the last one weren't even supposed to be part of the series. One day I was sitting in church and all of a sudden, I have to follow this line. I have one more line I need to follow. And the book just kind of came together. And when I got to the end, I'm like, this isn't the end. I have one more book. So I have one more of that. But it's nice to be able to do that one by myself and just have the control over it, because I've had so much fun writing it. If you've never written a leprechaun, it's tons of fun, but I joke because, you know, little bad luck things have happened throughout it, and I always blame it on writing leprechaun. So it's got its good and bad points to it.
That's cute. So, because obviously you've done this, have the publisher, which obviously takes more control. Now you've done more of the indie thing. And I've noticed more authors are starting to either do both or are moving away from their traditional publishing and starting to do more indie on their own. Is it really because publishers aren't? And it seems once you turn your manuscript over to a publisher that's pretty much it. You have no control at that point, that they just kind of do what they want. I mean, they edit. Because I had someone tell me once that they sent their manuscript in and they started taking like chapters out because they wanted to get the book, you know, under a certain page count. And they just like all of a sudden their work became chopped up. Have you felt or have you heard from other authors that you know that are kind of feeling like the traditional market isn't really thinking about you guys as authors as much, and that's why so many of you guys are going into the indie market more?
I think that might be part of it. I think another part is, when you go indie, you can put them out faster. And I know I've noticed that when you put a book up, you put a book out, it helps us sales of the other ones too. And so it's easier to put them out faster yourself than it is to go through a publisher, because, you know, it could take 2 years to release it. And I have my Cinderella book and my Princess and the Prom Queen book. Those two are through a publisher, and I've had great experience with that publisher. She gives me a lot more leeway than I know where you can get with other ones. There's contracts that you end up with publishers sometimes when they have to be the first one to see all your work. And sometimes you just want to do something all on your own, and it's harder to do it that way. So I think a lot of it is you just have a little bit more freedom. I'm trying to remember who it was that said it's better. I don't remember if it was David Farland or who it was, but, you know, they say sometimes it's better to get a book published by a publisher first, so you know everything that goes into it, and then, you know, then you're okay to do it on your own. But the publisher helps you with editing and covers and everything, and so you get to know what all that business side is, and then it's easier to go and do it by yourself. But I really think Even when people have publishers and then they do some indie, I think they still like to have the publisher, but then I think the indie is more about control. You can control when things get fixed. You can control when you have your, I mean, how you get your covers to look. And, you know, you're an artist. These things are your babies, you know, and you want them to look right. And, you know, I've through doing Pinterest, a lot of it, authors will do the Pinterest and, you know, this is what my characters look like and all this stuff. And, you know, I look at those sometimes. I'm like, I know who all the actors are for my movie. Now I want to have it. You know, so this is who I want to play these characters and stuff. And I think it's just sometimes a control thing. You have control of everything you want to do with it,
right.
Which is really nice. So I know that's why I went that way with my luck books, is because I knew how I wanted these books to look.
I want to say, especially as an author, I mean, you guys are very creative anyhow, because, I mean, obviously you're spinning these tales, so I would, you know, totally see how when you're kind of cut out of the creative aspect of how the book's going to look, it's really hard, because you obviously, when you sat down, how you visualize your characters and everything, or the scenes and stuff, if they do a cover and it's supposed to, like, capture, you know, a scene that's happened or a character. Because I always talk about, I always use Harry Potter when I'm out
uh-huh.
speaking. And I always ask the audience, you know, where's Harry Potter's scar? When we're talking, you know, when I'm talking to them about, you know, just the creative aspect and characters and stuff. And everybody always points to some people point to, like, the right temple. Some people point to the left temple. Some people go, like, literally, like, dead center of their head. And it's
uh-huh.
funny, like, people who've watched the movie, of course, tend to be more, like, off-center from the, you know, from the center of their forehead.
Uh-huh.
But ones who've read the book and have never really watched the movie, they always go for, like,
uh-huh.
either their left or right temple area. And I start looking at that more, and what's interesting, you know, and this goes right to what you're talking about, like covers and having control, is the UK version of the covers for the Harry Potter series are different from the American version. And
uh-huh.
if you look where Harry's scar is, they're in different spots. And if you look at Daniel Radcliffe in the movie, his scar is in a whole nother area as well.
Yeah,
so,
it is. It is.
Yeah. And so I can see that, because as an author, you know, if I was J.K. Rowling, and I'm sure, you know, like, if this ever, you know, if your books get into movie and stuff, you'd be the same way. You'd be looking at it going, this isn't how I saw my character. It's wrong, you know.
Yep. Well, it's like Percy Jackson, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They combined two characters into one, and this Annabelle is supposed to be nice and, you know, competitive and stuff, but they totally joined Clarissa with her, and, you know, it throws the readers off, because that's not what they're expecting, you know. And my luck books, for example, I've always pictured Megan, my main character, with blonde hair. Always have. Her and Jared. And I've had so many people say, no, she's got brown hair. I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure she has blonde hair. I wrote her, you know.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that kind of made me laugh about the books when they first got put out is, I didn't put a setting, you know. I knew where I wanted it to be. It was in a town close to my hometown in Idaho, and I knew where it was, but I had put it in the books one time, and I think it was book three. Like, that doesn't help anybody. They have to go all the way through before they know where this is. You know, so I wanted to fix that. And, yeah, I think the details, you have more control over it. You know what? This person doesn't look like this, or this isn't exactly where they did this. And you have a lot more control over it when it's your own book, instead of you get the cover and say, here, this is going to be the cover on your book.
Right.
You know, I have a picture book that I'm in love with. I've had it since I was in high school. I've rewritten it several times. I actually had Rick Walton read it a few times to help me get some pointers and stuff. And I want that book published so badly. And I actually think it could help a lot of people. And it wasn't my intention to help people. I just wrote it for fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I am so worried that when it gets put out that it won't look how I want it to look, because it's about an anteater. And, you know, when you picture an anteater, there's so many ways you could draw that thing. And I'm so scared that it won't look how I want it to look. And so it just keeps sitting there, you know, because publishing, see, self-publishing a picture book is a lot more expensive than self-publishing a, you know, a normal book, just because of all the color and everything else.
Right.
So I'm holding out for that one. I really would like a publisher for that book. But at the same time, I'm still so nervous because I want it to look how I picture it, not how someone else pictures it.
Yeah, no, that makes full sense. And I get that since I have picture books out. And that was my big thing. And I was lucky because the publisher I'm with let me get my own illustrator.
Oh, that's so awesome.
And I know that's not a normal thing. And that's because, you know, she's in the indie and, you know, small publisher market. So I was fortunate that way. Plus, you know, I built a rapport. So, with the person, but I remember the same thing. I was very, very concerned about my characters when it came to the picture book, because you have exactly how you see it, and because there's such little text, you know, someone can get a totally different picture. And it's funny that you mentioned Rick Walton, because that's who looked at my books before I sent them out. And I never said what my characters looked like, but, you know, the paper sugar paw and Bonnie Whiskers, so, you know, you could come up with all kinds of things that could go with those names that are animals. And Rick kept telling me that he didn't think that my Bonnie Whiskers character should be a cat, because in his mind, because of the whiskers, a cat kept coming to his head. And he's like, "But I don't want you to do a cat. You need to do something else other than a cat." And I started laughing when he told me that. I'm like, it's a bunny. In my mind, it was a blonde-eared bunny. And so I had to literally tell. Yeah, so I actually had to tell my illustrator, go watch the episodes of Ruby and Max, and I said, my babysitter's like Ruby in personality, to make sure she came out like the right type of bunny, too. So I can totally understand that. Well, let's talk about your Lux series, because obviously you got to redo them, you released them, you did the covers. So what were some of the things, if you want to open it, if you like, I can't talk about it because I don't want to make the publisher mad, but what were some of the things that, with the old cover versus the new cover, that you have seen have improved the series, or that you didn't like and that's why you made the change?
The biggest thing was people kept thinking it was a different genre. The original cover gives me nightmares. you'd have to Google it, which I don't suggest it, because it was a very, very evil leprechaun. I'm like, my leprechaun is happy, and yeah, he's mischievous, but he's not evil.
And that look like the evil leprechaun from the Leprechaun movies?
Yeah, it was about that bad. It was really scary. It was really bad. And Lightning Source, I believe, couldn't get it to work right. It wouldn't bleed right when they were making the book, and I finally said, good, I hate that cover. And my publisher was like, well, so do I, so let's change it. And I'm like, well, if you hated it and I hated it, why were you letting it go through?
Yeah.
And, so we had to put off the release for almost a month because we were trying to get this new cover. Mm-hmm. And then we got it, and it was cute. It was a cute one. You know, it was a doorway like I wanted. It was cute, but everybody kept thinking that this YA book was middle grade, and not just middle grade, but young middle grade. And it didn't work, so it wasn't selling, and everybody just, you know, I'd have people look at it. I'm like, what genre do you think this is? And they're like, it's middle grade. Well, my girl is 16 years old. She is a tough 16-year-old girl, and there's romance in it, you know, everything that breaks, and it doesn't work for that genre. And I actually took that to the, I think it was boot camp at Storymakers, and Lisa Mangum was my leader, and she read it. She's like, this is definitely not middle grade. This is definitely YA because of the theme, you know. And so it was really throwing people off. They kept saying, well, I don't want a little kid book. I want a teenage book. So it threw people off. And so I wanted to change it, and he wouldn't change it. He said, no, because then it would cost much more money, and I don't want to do it. And then in book two, we found several more grammar mistakes than what I was comfortable with. And, again, they wouldn't change it. The covers it was better by far, but it was still not one that would generate a lot of interest, but it was more the mistakes inside that I was worried about and that they wouldn't fix. And I know that, you know, for big publishers, that's somewhat normal sometimes, but not all the time. You know, I know that you've got Brandon Sanderson and a few other people that are always looking for people to help them find mistakes so that when it comes out in paperback, it's perfect, you know.
Right.
And they wouldn't fix it. They wouldn't do anything. And, you know, book three, they forgot my acknowledgments in the book.
Like,
wow. No, I really want that in there. It's kind of a big deal to me, especially these acknowledgments, because there's a scene in that book that my brother, who's this farm boy, was helping me. He took me up into the mountains to help me find this setting that I'd wanted in the book, and I needed to be able to picture it. And it was the coolest thing in the whole world to have this guy telling me where dragons can perch and where the battle can happen and stuff. And it was just it was the coolest experience. And I wanted to thank him for it, and it didn't show up in the book. And that was a big blow to me. I felt really bad because I'm like, no, I want that in there, because he was a big part of one of the battle scenes, you know, the final battle scene in this book. And, you know, it really made me sad. And that novella, the one that just came out, I wanted to have that be part of the marketing for book three. And, you know, if you buy this book, then I'll send you this novella with it. And the publisher was like, yeah, let's get it out. And then once you're done with that promotion, then we'll give you a contract. Well, the contract never came. And I kept asking, and they're like, oh, it's coming. Oh, it's coming. And it never came. And I finally said, okay, it's been 90 days. I get my rights back for that. And by the way, I've decided, let me get the rights back for the other ones. And I had to wait another 90 days. And like I said, between that, during that time, I suddenly realized, wait, I don't have a contract with the company anymore. These rights are mine. So I went through 6 months of waiting and realized, no, they were my rights like 6 months ago. But anyway, I learned a lot during that time, and I know I went through the legal process to get it and stuff, but it was mostly I wanted something that would show teenage. So when I went back to look at covers, you know, I was trying to find a good leprechaun to go on the teenage book, and it just wasn't working. And even finding the right Megan wasn't working for me. And I'm like, you know what? There's a lot of symbols on covers right now. There's, you know, you have Divergent, you have Hunger Games, and not that I want to compare my books to those by any means, especially because they're dystopian, mine are not. You know, but I noticed that people are going, I mean, books were going away a little bit more from people and more symbols and stuff like that. And so I was looking through, and I found this shattered four-leaf clover, and I fell totally in love with that. I'm like, that's exactly what I picture with stolen luck. You know, her luck has been so good, and it's shattered. And my sister and her husband put it together, and it's just fantastic. And it's got a Celtic border around it, and that's been a huge draw. People really love the Celtic. I've actually been more and more surprised every time I go to an event, and, you know, the Celtic is what pulls people in the book. And
I wanted to use it.
Oh, thank you. I think the Celtic is really what pulled them in, and I used it because, you know, the four-leaf clover, that's the Celtic meaning for luck, and she fights a lot of Irish mythology, you know, and it's been fun to go through all the Irish mythology to find out, okay, how can I torture this poor girl with these creatures? And it's pretty easy. Irish mythology is my all-time favorite, and they have some pretty crazy creatures in that mythology. So it's been really fun. I keep talking about wanting to go to Ireland to see all these settings that are in the book, and I get to go in November. I'm ecstatic.
Oh, that's exciting. That's very exciting. You'll
so
probably get
I'm like,
some more ideas while you're there.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. It's something that I've absolutely loved. I study Irish mythology all the time to try and find new ideas. And we got this really good deal for flights. And my husband has enough points for flights and hotels that we can go for the week and pay almost nothing. And we'll go to London and go there for a little bit, but then go over to Ireland. And I'm like, hey, we have to see this and this and this and this. They're in my books, and I have to make sure they're correct. So I'm beyond excited, you know, because I finally get to see everything that I've been writing about for so long. So
no, that's exciting. And I'm glad that your new covers are doing well for you, too, because they are. They're beautiful. And, you know, I have noticed that within the genres that the middle grade books tend to have more of like the characters on the front, you know, in one of the
uh-huh.
scenes that are from the book. Or when you look at YA, it's usually, like you said, in even like mainstream, generally it's a symbol or it's like I read the Dresden Files, and it's funny to look at
uh-huh.
those. You should go Google those. Go Google that and go look at the images for the covers. Because every cover has it's an illustration of the main character, which is Dresden, but
uh-huh.
what's interesting is he wears a hat and he always wears like the long, you know, like raincoat duster type jacket. But they never show his face. His face is always in shadow. You just see the, you know, more of his duster and his hat that he wears and his staff that he holds in his hand. And every cover he's slightly different looking, or like the coloration of like what his duster is always like changes between like black and like dark browns. It's kind of funny, but
uh-huh.
but everything else is more like the symbols that are in the book, and like the title is like what stands out. And it does, it looks more sophisticated, it looks more grown up, where when you look at the young adult and even, middle grade chapter books and picture books, when they have the illustrations on front, it does, it seems like it's a kid, you know, like for younger kids, because it seems,
yep.
it doesn't seem as mature. So I think you went the right way with their covers.
And another difference, and I mean, I guess mine still are almost more cartoonish, but they're more hand-drawn covers, and, you know, YA is more picture covers. And, you know, I did go against that a little bit because of my Celtic and all that stuff, but I still feel like it shows out so much more than it did before. And then, of course, you get your romance and stuff that has the people on the covers, and I'm excited to go that route. It's going to be fun to see how that plays out. It was fun to write. You know, I love my dragons and my leprechauns and all that stuff for all my mythology, and that's what I'll keep writing. But it was kind of fun to do romance because I'm like, oh, this is real life. You know,
no,
you get to see what's going on. And
yeah, I would say with your romance, is it going to be focused in the young adult market crossover or in more of the mainstream market?
It's going to be more mainstream. It's just, it's clean, but it's going to be mainstream. It's set in New York, and spent a lot of time on Google there. I'm like, I need to go to New York now, too. But I just wanted to try something different just to see, you know, what it's like. And I really, I love romance books. I love romance movies. Those really super cheesy holiday movies that, you know, come out every year on ABC Family or whatever, those are my favorite. I'll watch those. My husband will go out of town for work, and those are ones I watch because it's fun to see them get together and, you know, then break up and then get back together again. And I'm like, you know what? I want to try it. I want to see how it is to write one of those. And it was fun. I really enjoyed it. You know, a thriller is one of those other ones. I'm like, I don't think, you know, it would be fun sometime to try to write those. I don't know if I can, but it's a good challenge, you know. But I love romances enough. I wanted to see if I could do it, and I've really had a lot of fun with it. But, you know, the fantasy will always be my favorite thing to do. I still have a few more ideas in that one. In fact, with Megan, with this being her last one, and I want it to be her last one, I've thought of doing a middle grade version with her little sister, because her little sister has a lot of spunk. She's a fun little girl, and, you know, she wishes for the craziest things with her wishes from a leprechaun and stuff. So I thought it would be kind of fun to follow her adventures and do a middle grade version, but we'll see what happens. I still have to come up with a couple story ideas for that one, but, you know,
I was going to say, I've noticed spin-off series from like from you know a series that does well, and then people I've noticed authors are starting to do spin-offs from you know so all of a sudden it's kind of like a this kind of becomes you know seasons on TV instead of you know where you just read a series of books and then you move on to a new series of books, you know it's like season two, you know it's a whole
yeah.
you know second. And I love that because there are characters, like you're talking about, like, you know, Megan's little sister, where you get to know them, but you don't get to know them as intensely as, you know, as a reader as you do the main character. But you always wonder, like, well, what made them do that? You know, I know they did it, and
yep.
I know why they, where it played into the main story, but what was the motivation for that character? And you never get to learn that because they're the, you know, supporting characters or the walk-on character or whatever.
Yeah. Well, and book four is actually in the point of view of her boyfriend, Jared, and in the point of view of Megan. And I was having it all be Megan, but she's off in Europe traveling and having her adventures there, and you didn't see anything about Jared. And I'm like, well, part of the enjoyment of this book were the two of them together. And so I decided to put it in his point of view, too. And, wow, that taught me a lot about him, you know, because he's always been Megan's boyfriend. And
right.
he's been one of my favorite characters of all, you know, totally in love with Jared. And I didn't know a ton about him or his background or how he worked well with his parents. You know, I didn't really know a lot about him until this book. And I loved it because I finally got to see more of who Jared was. And that's also why I did the novella, because of Megan's brother. I finally got to see his head because he's always been a really snarky, sarcastic brother, you know, and in the novella, you get to find out why he is the way he is because his little sister has gotten everything. She's always been super lucky. She has everything go her way, and he's just kind of off on the side taking what's left, you know.
Mm.
And so you got to see it from his point of view and why he is the way he is. And the funny thing is, he wasn't even supposed to be a main character. He was supposed to be a side character. And then in the first book, one time, he just takes off, and he takes part of the world. And that was the first time I'd ever had that happen, where a character's like, you're doing it wrong, let me take care of it. And he goes off, and he saves part of the day, and I was in shock. I'm like, my characters just did what they wanted to, and what do I do with this? And so I went back, and I rewrote the book with him having a slightly bigger part, and now he is got a pretty big part in the series, but he wasn't supposed to have a part. He was supposed to stay small and just someone in the background. It was supposed to be all about Megan, but he had other things to say about that.
And I love
so it was kind of fun.
I love hearing what authors say that their characters take over, because I know everybody on the opposite side of the writing desk says things like, well, you're the one who controls your characters. You're the one who are dreaming them up. How did they take over? So I would love for you to kind of explain what that feels like. What do you feel like a character's taking over? Because I think there's a lot of readers out there who, when they hear authors say that, they're like, what? I don't get that.
Yeah, one of my good friends has decided that I need to be committed a few different times. So I am not an outliner. I try to outline, and it stresses me out because I can't allow my books to do what they want. And so I've tried. My Atlantis series that we talked about last time I was on, that had more of an outline than I've ever used. And it was really hard because I had a little bit less creativity to go with. And so I'm a total pantser. And so I kind of go along as it goes. So you would think that it would be okay for the character to do what he wants. It's just part of the book. Well, so this part is going to be a tiny bit of spoiler, but Megan has this leprechaun that keeps coming after her, and at one point she goes into her sister's room to find a teddy bear that she thought her sister had stolen. She goes back in her room, and the room is trashed. She goes back out again, and when she comes in, it's spotless again, and so she's kind of freaking out a little bit and runs downstairs, and she's going to sleep in her brother's room because she doesn't want to run into this leprechaun. And so I was planning on having Megan leave the room and go up, and then the Leprechaun was going to transport her with him, and that's how the day was going to be saved, and she would figure it out and get her luck back and all that stuff.
Right.
So they're standing at the doorway. They've heard the noise. They're standing there, and Megan was going to run up, but all of a sudden Adam does. And he's like, you stay here. You're not going to, you know, you're a walking disaster. You know, you stay here. I'm going. And they fight, and then Adam gets taken. And I'm like, wait, what just happened here? and it's just sometimes I think your mind or you know, that's controlling these characters on the book, your mind's like, no, that can't work. It's got to go this way. And so it's kind of your creative brain taking over from your own brain and saying, you know what, if you're going to make this story work, it has to go this direction. And so I think a lot of times when your characters jump off the page and run with it, it's your brain saying, that doesn't work. You know, you're going to come to a dead end up at the beginning and you're not going to know how to fix it. So let's go this way and see how it goes. And I don't think I've ever gone back ever from that way, because it does work better. Having Adam be a main character works better. Having him want to protect his little sister at that point should be how a brother acts. And so he was doing what a big brother should, instead of, here, I'm going to wuss out and sit down on my bed while you go up and save the day. You know, it doesn't happen like that most of the time. I'm sure it does sometimes, but, you know, it's a protective thing. He wanted to protect his sister, and so he's going to do it. And I really think it's your brain just saying, nope, that's not going to be how it works. This is how it's going to be how it works. And it shocks you when it happens. I haven't had a ton since then. That was the biggest jump ever for it to happen. And another one was a huge twist in book two, and Steve's like, wouldn't it be funny if that person was actually evil? And I just stared at him and I'm like, you know what, that would make the story so much better. And so I put the plot twist in there, and you know, it's kind of a huge revelation to the author, but it works better, you know. So it's kind of your creative brain saying, hey, you're doing it wrong, let me take over for a second.
It's funny when I hear authors, you know, do talk about it, and you know, I've never had anybody actually share it on the show, so thank you for that. It seems like, and that's why I thought it was funny when you start with the whole, my friend wants to, you know, thinks I need to be committed, and thought that a few times. Sometimes I think that with authors, I hate to use this terminology because I know you guys really aren't, you know, have split personalities, but it is kind of like you guys have a split personality when you write, because I think you can hear those different characters in your mind playing out their roles or how they would react to something that the reader doesn't understand, you know, because, you know, obviously we're reading on the page, where in your mind you can hear them actually kind of saying, I wouldn't do that, you know.
and that's totally true.
You go, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's totally true. Hey, I wouldn't say it that way. You know, one of the fun things about the Atlanta series is some of the characters from the different books actually visit each other's books. So my main character is in two other books, and then, you know, theirs are in mine. And we would actually write our scene and then send it to that person to make sure that we were writing their character correctly, because it's in their head. So they would know if someone would say something that way or not. And
right.
We had to change things a few times to make sure it works. And, you know, I totally hear those voices in my head. I really do. as I'm writing, saying, okay, I would say it this way. Okay, I would give this expression. And, you know, and it was after book two, I think. One day my brain, I'm like, what if I can't ever come up with a story again? What if this is my one and only, you know, what if I can't come up with other ideas? And then my brain laughed and said, good luck with that. And now I have 10 stories that are all screaming at me saying, you need to write it. And that, you know, I think creative people as a whole, whether it's artists or anybody else, they have these extra little compartments that say, okay, this is this book file. This is this book file, you know, and this is this, and I'm just making myself sound crazy right now, apparently, but it's true. You have all these ideas that are running around in your brain just waiting to be put on page, and once you get to that point where you can write them, it's like a release. You know, like an artist that knows that this is exactly how it looks, and once you get it on the paper, it's like, oh, look what I just did, you know. And I think in a way you are schizophrenic because, I mean, not certified, but at the same time, your mind comes up with all these ideas, and they have to come from somewhere, and they all have their own little voices of how they say it, because you have to stop and you have to think, okay, what would this character do? What would this character do? And you can put it on the page the way they want it. And actually, a couple nights ago, you know, 4 a.m. in the morning, 4 a.m., I was able to take a step back and watch my process and say, you know, I really am hearing them tell me what to put, you know, what words to put on the page. And it was really a cool experience. Because, you know, with me being an outline, I mean, a panther doing everything as I go, I just write. I just let it go and don't think anything about it. But taking a step back, I'm like, you know what? I do hear and know exactly what's going to go on the page next. Right. And it's kind of fascinating. And I think that's why outlining is such a hard thing for me, is because I can't allow that just to happen. And, yeah. You know, there's people, I can't write a book unless I outline. I have to have it outlined. That's how I am with speaking. I have to have an outline when I speak because I have to stay on task or I would be everywhere. And then I get not discouraged. I get flustered because I can't remember what I'm going to say next. But on paper, I can do whatever I want and have the story happen. And honestly, I think that's how I taught myself to write. In high school, when I wrote this anteater book I was telling you about, I would finish my work as a library aide, and I'd sit down. I'm like, okay, here's a creature, here's an animal, 1, 2, 3, go. And I'd write this story. And most of them were really crazy stories, like a flea that grew up to be big enough to torture New York City or something like that. I don't even know if I have that file anymore. And they would be fun. But this one, I attached myself to it more. I think it was my best written of them, honestly. But that's how I taught myself, was here's a character, here's a setting, let's go. And so that's just what I've done. And so, you know, maybe someday I'll have a little bit more of an outline than what I do now. But I enjoy seeing, you know, I enjoy the journey, I guess you could say, you know,
right.
Seeing how it all comes together. And it makes me sad when I can't do that because I have written down, no, this is what you have to do. and I don't want to do that. And 9 times out of 10, if I have an ending to a book, that it's not going to end up that way. I can think of one book that ended the way I thought it was going to end. One book out of the 8 that I have published.
But I guess, honestly, the good thing is, though, you do, even though the ending changes, at least, because that's the one thing I've noticed where, especially like with TV writing lately, because Marsha and I focus on everything. We don't just focus on books. We focus on script writing for television shows and movies and a lot of different stuff. We've even started looking at the music industry, too, and how that process works with the writing and all of that within it. But I've noticed as a reader or as a viewer, you can always tell if the writer knows how it's going to end, because 9 times out of 10, if they haven't had at least a concept of where they want the story to go, it starts to meander, just go like all over the place. And you're like, okay, you know, you can like see it doing the winding.
Yep.
So even though you're not outlining, I mean, and your ending changes, at least you have an idea of how you want it to end, so it's not like you're doing the whole meandering kind of thing, which is probably one reason why sitting down and writing without an outline has worked for you, because you still have the end goal in mind.
Yeah, I do, and, you know, and that's part of why book 5 ended up having to happen, is because I got to this point where I'm like, I could end it right now, but it's not going to work right here. You know, it would have ended up being in the same battle place, and I didn't want that to happen. It wouldn't have cost her as much as it should have by what was happening in the scene. And so I had to choose to end it differently. And I like the ending much better. Hopefully the readers do, but I like the ending, how it happened, because it had to happen that way. Sometimes,
right.
You know, you get to a point and you're like, nope, it's got to do this. And it's my Cinderella book that ended exactly how I wanted it to. And that one, I mean, I guess you could say I had an outline in the fact that it was a Cinderella book, but the main story was completely different. But I still knew where I wanted to finish it. My Princess and the Prom Queen, it was nothing like I wanted to finish it, but I think it's 10 times better the way it ended up. And it's because of the way I wrote it up to that point that it had to end that way instead of, okay, well, now I had the ending this way, so let's twist everything enough to make that ending work. You know,
right.
It doesn't work that way. You have to allow for that. And in fact, you know, Brandon Sanderson is an outliner, and I asked him one time how he works with it if his character suddenly does take off. And he said, well, I just rewrite the outline to fit it back in. I'm like, okay, that makes sense, you know. And so I could see how it works that way, but I would have to rewrite my outline, like, all the time because it's totally different.
Yeah.
But, you know, writing the series that I did have to have some outlines. I had to know her class periods because there are two of the books that end up in the same school year. And so I had to know all the teachers, so I had to have those outlines. I had to remember everything that happened before that, so it was more like a pre-outline, you know, and then I was able to go with it. But I think sometimes if you don't have the end in mind, like you said, it will meander, and you have to stop, and you have to think, okay, what was the point of this book? what was she trying to solve? You know, and usually if that happens, because it's happened a couple times, I have to go back and say, okay, this is where it's leading. Okay, now I know where I'm going. So I guess my outline a lot of times is the book and where it's heading, so you know where to keep going with it.
Right.
So,
more like a loose outline for you.
Yeah, very loose, very, very loose outline, but it works for me. It doesn't work for everybody else. I know a lot of people are very strict outliners, and
oh my gosh,
I admire that. I really do.
Yeah. I just watched an interview with R.L. Stein, and he was talking about outlines, and he was talking about how much he hates outlines. I mean, he literally, like, what, everything you feel like, how you don't like them, he hates them. But the publishing company, and that's why I listened to it, because it was interesting, because he was forced to by his editor at the company that publishes all the Goosebumps books. I mean, they always want this out. They always want an outline, so it forced him to learn how to outline, like, really detailed outline out books. It was one of the most interesting interviews to hear about an author who, you know, how they had to learn how to marry the analytical side to the creative side of the business. And it was, like, hard to do. So I totally went listening to you after hearing that interview with him. I'm just like, yeah, I can understand, you know. Because it did, and I think it does. It ties you down from your creative processes, too. I mean, that's one of the things. Have you – because – And I know not everybody does this, but have you ever sat down because of the fact you use a loose outline where you've typed something up, you know, not just your characters running away and, you know, telling you this is how it's going to be, but like just anything where you've, like, typed it up, and when you go back and you look and you're like, wow, did I really write that? Because you didn't expect it to be that good. Because I wonder sometimes, like, as an author, if you guys do that, where, I mean, even though you've, like, kind of had the idea in mind, you're typing away, but you're in the mode, so you're not really 100% concentrating what's going on the screen, because obviously it's all in your head, where you've gone back and go, like, did that really come out of me? Did someone sneak into my office and type that instead? Have you had that moment?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've had it a couple times. I'm like, whoa, that's cool. Did I actually do that? You know, there's a scene in Stolen Luck, and I'm not going to bring it up because it's my favorite scene, and I don't want to ruin it for people. But I had it, and I needed a twist, a big twist, because Louis was really mad at Megan at that point. And I was going along, and my son's like, you should do this. And my husband's like, no, you should do that, but you should twist it even more. And I just kind of looked at him, and I'm like, okay. So I took this big chunk of my book out, and I saved it on another spot, and I wrote it in. And I thought it was fun. I had fun writing it, you know, but it was when I went back to do revisions that I laughed my head off through that part, because I'm like, oh, my gosh. It actually turned out 10 times better than what I thought. And it, at the same time, you're kind of like, well, that sounds pretty cocky, but it's not. You know, it's kind of nice to go back and say, I kind of did something awesome there, you know. So there's been times when I go back and read, I'm like, seriously, I put that in there? That's pretty cool. You know, I thought that humor or that intense situation, it's like, whoa, I just gave myself chills, or oh my heavens, I can't stop laughing. You know,
yeah.
I think it's the coolest thing ever when you can go back and read your own thing and bust up laughing at a part that you were hoping people would find funny. And so it's kind of fun to go back and say, oh, hey, look what I did. I did something right.
Oh, that's great. Well, we're getting to the top of our hour, so I would love for you, Jacqueline, to share any places that you're going to be. I know Comic-Con's coming up in Salt Lake, and I know you're out in that area. So are you planning on being at Comic-Con this year? Because I know,
yes,
I think all of you guys from the Gates of Atlantis were there last year.
Yeah, we all did it together at the Salt Lake Comic-Con in September. And then at FanX, four of us did a booth together. And then this year, I have a group of friends that are coming all together. We're in booth 2264. It's Writers, Inc. And Writers, Inc. being, we have several writers, and then my sister who did my book covers, she is the ink part. She's the artist. And so we have an artist, and then we've got a bunch of writers. And it's kind of cool. The L shape in the Comic-Con Center, we're right there on the corner. So it's a pretty good spot. I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
And then I'll be at the Christmas show in Sandy on November 14th through 16th, and I'm excited about that one. And then my brain, I'm trying to think. I actually have a signing this weekend, now that I think about it, at Pioneer Books in Provo. So once September hits, I get kind of crazy with all the different shows and stuff I do. And then, of course, end of November, I get to go to London. So I'm really excited about that one. I'm like, let's kind of skip everything and go to that one instead. But no, I'm excited for Comic-Con. I have a lot of fun meeting people, handing out bookmarks, and I've met a few writers that have questions. So I love to answer questions. So if you have questions and you're going to Comic-Con, come find me, because I love to answer questions about writing. I could talk writing all day, if you hadn't noticed.
I really need to get up there this year, because I don't realize how many authors I've had on the show here at the World of Ink that go to Comic-Con out there in Salt Lake that, you know, I've interviewed before. And I knew that there were some writers there. I just didn't realize how many of you guys are out there. So I looked at my husband's show. I'm like, we really need to, like, take the trip up to Salt Lake and go to Comic-Con for a day. And he's like, I'm going to totally lose you over there in that world. But
it's so many
people, you know, in person.
Well, and Jim Butcher's going to be there this year. So you can meet the Dresden File author right there. So, yeah, I'm excited about those. And, you know, Chris Evans is coming, and I kind of died over that one. And I tried to get a photo op for my daughter, and it sold out in less than a minute. And she was devastated.
Wow.
She's five, but she was devastated. But we get to meet the Weasley twins, so I'm excited about that. But I'm super excited about the big authors that are coming, because I haven't read some of them, but I know them well enough. I'm like, oh, I just want to meet them. It's just awesome, you know. But we have 10 authors in my booth alone, and I'm really excited to get to know some of them. There's a couple that I don't know as well, and then there's a few that are my good friends from all the different writer chats that we do and the different writing workshops that are up here and stuff. So I am really, really excited for that one. And I think that's the biggest thing that I have coming up. And then, like I said, the Christmas show in November, I think there's going to be 8 of us at that show. Some of them are the same repeats as Comic-Con, but there'll be a few different ones. So,
and then
it's,
in October,
it's exciting.
I say in October, you know, is the Humanities Book Festival, which, you know, happens pretty much all over the upper part of the state, because St. George's got theirs down here. Are you going to be popping in at any of those locations during the October, you know, basically book festival for the Utah Humanities? Is there a chance people can catch you?
There's one on October 10th, and I'm still trying to decide. I have a writing group that I could also do that day, so I'm like, I don't know what to do. But there's one that's actually for YA middle grade and children's books at the Viridian on the October 10th, and I really kind of want to go to that because it's my genre. And then there's one November 7th at the Viridian. So it's after the all the humanity stuff, but it's what's that one called? Oh, heavens. I don't remember. It's on November 7th at the Viridian, and I'm doing that one too. It was fun. I did it last year too. What's it called? I don't even have my computer, so look it up really quick. Anyway, so I'll take part of that one too. And actually, I put together a writing workshop at the beginning of August. That was a lot of fun. It was me. I did all the planning, and then my arts council helped me with putting up the final product, and then they were there to help support me at the thing, and they were awesome helpers. Awesome helpers. And then it went well enough that people are excited for next year. And so I'm kind of thinking of trying to get it involved with the humanities thing and have it be part of everything else. So it would be in October, and I would like to get it connected with all the other humanities opportunities that happen. I just worry if I put it in October that it's going to be on the same weekend as everything else. So... I'm working on that.
I would say October gets really, really crazy out in the state of Utah for the authors.
Oh, it really does.
It literally, like, you go from, like, the, like, second to, not second, like, the third or fourth week of September to probably, like, almost Thanksgiving, and you guys are, like, nonstop. I've noticed that for Utah authors.
I did that last year, and I think I had something every single weekend through all 3 months. It was crazy. And then I had a slight break when I put out a book, so it wasn't completely relaxed because I put out a book. And so all the editing and stuff that went with that. But I enjoy it. I enjoy going. I think, you know, the sales on Amazon are awesome, and you want them, and, you know, it helps to get to know that. But I really love being there and talking to people about the books and seeing their excitement and, you know, hearing later, you know, I really enjoyed that book or whatever. So I really like the appearances. I have a lot more fun with those because I have a lot more say, you know, well, not say, but I get to interact with the people around me that way. So
yeah.
I love doing the appearances. So while it makes things crazy as far as the weekends go with my family, they come to a lot of the things with me, and it's exciting. And, you know, we're starting this weekend with the one in Provo, and my September is actually a lot calmer than normal, but I think actually the Viridian one that in November is actually, I mean, the Viridian one that was in September last year is the one that got moved to November. So that kind of cleared up my September schedule, and but I love it. I have fun.
That's good. And so also, before we, you know, end the show today, can you share where people can find you online who don't live in the state of Utah? So they, you know, unless they're traveling through, hopefully they'll stop by at some of your events and come say hi to you. But for those who aren't, where they can just quickly do that, where else can they find you and follow you and learn more about your books and what you have going on?
I'm on Facebook, and it's just the facebook.com/ Jacqueline Weist author. That's my Facebook page, and that's actually attached to Twitter, which is just at Jacqueline Weist. And then I have my website is www.jacquelineweist.com. I should probably spell out my name because it's spelled different. And then jacquelineweist.blogspot.com is my blog. I do a lot of writing samples and stuff on that one, and I'm trying to think. Those are mostly where you find me. My website, JacquelineWeist.com, actually has a store on there where you can get my products, and my books are a lot cheaper on there than they are on Amazon. So if you want a better deal, I believe it's free shipping as well, go to my website and do the store there because it's cheaper on there. So
that's a good thing.
Yeah. Amazon really sets their prices as this is the lowest you can go, and I like to go just slightly bit lower, so that's why I say go to this one. And plus, if you go to my website, you get it signed. You know, you get a signed copy of it. On Amazon, you wouldn't get a signed copy of it.
Yeah,
so
you pay less and get it signed by the author. That, I mean, what reader wouldn't love that? That's great.
Exactly.
You might start setting a trend. Maybe all the other authors will fall in line on that. Because that's the one thing I know, like, with my books, I love reading, but when I get the author's signature in there, I treasure it that much more because now it just becomes more special.
Yes,
it really
you know,
is.
And it's fun to ask people if they want signatures, and they're like, yes, please, you know. I had a bookstore back in 2010, and I had authors come in all the time, and so I'd get all these books signed, and it spoiled me rotten to where I'm like, now I just want all the books signed.
Yeah.
So it's like you said, it makes them more valuable because it's got their name. They took the time to write their name in it, so it makes it that much cooler. So yeah, if you want a signed copy of my book, go to my website because that's how you'll get them, or come and see me at one of the shows that I'm doing in the next little while.
Yep, well, that's great. Well, thank you for coming on again, Jacqueline. It's been great having you on. You're always such a delight.
Oh, thank you. It was a lot of fun. I enjoy doing this. So thank you for having me. I'm glad that you invited me.
Oh, you're welcome. And definitely, you know, if you have anything else that ends up coming up, you know, in the next few months or year, you know, definitely let us know here at the World of Ink. I know you're pretty good about letting me know what's going on. That's how I know about, you know, your series getting re-released and all of that with the new covers, because you messaged me right away on Facebook to let me know. So definitely keep us, you know, in tuned. And if anything comes up or like any of your events you want to share, I mean, you can send it to me or Marcia, and we can put it up on our World of Ink Facebook page and blog so people know too. Because we like to let
people
know.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah, we like to let everybody know where authors are going to be. And since, you know, Marcia and I are in two different states, it makes it really fun for us because we get to not just share in our own individual state, we get to share, you know, it almost becomes nationwide for us in many ways because we've, between the two of us, have connected with people all over. So, and that's a good thing for our listeners to know, to go to worldofinknetwork.com or to blogspot.com, World of Ink Network, because, yeah, we'll post that up. So definitely keep us in tune, and I wish you the best of luck.
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
And I just want to let our listeners know one more time some of the things that are coming up here at the World of Ink, if you just, you know, tuned in after we had started the show. So the World of Ink Network right now, we've been having some difficulties on Blog Talk Radio, so you will not find all of our shows listed, but we are getting shows into the system for September to the end of the year, so just keep checking back. If you follow us on Facebook under World of Ink Network, Twitter at World of Ink, or go to worldofinknetwork.com, and you can also connect to our blog that way. You can stay abreast of what we have going on. There will be a show on September 9th. That one is officially scheduled. That will be a fun show that I will be doing. It involves young kids who have had cancer who are survivors, and they got together with some of the best-selling authors around, like Brandon Mall, I'm trying to remember all, Jennifer Nelson, Shannon Hill, just to name a few. And then Jonathan Diaz did a fantasy photo shoot with these children, and then the best-selling authors worked with the children to write a story around that photo shoot. And it was basically what their dream would be if they could do anything they wanted in the world. So that's going to be a really fun show to listen to on September 9th. The book, by the way, is called True Heroes, A Treasury of Modern-Day Fairy Tales. Definitely check it out. It's an amazing book. I have a copy here, and it was probably one of the best books I have seen done recently along that topic. So that's one thing to check out. And then also, if you are a author or a small publisher, you can go to worldofinknetwork.com and check out some of our services. We are starting to do some commercial advertising that we're going to be rolling out starting this fall. And then we also do other things to help authors and publishers get the word out on the books that they have going on. And we also have directors on, screenwriters, you know, musicians. So if you're not a book, you know, writer, still contact us. We love doing all different types of shows and you know, talking about the industry, because writing's everything in the creative world. I mean, it always starts pretty much with that. So definitely check us out. And I thank all listeners for listening in today, and have a great week. Bye-bye.
Follow me to the World of Ink.